You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk Live, joining us now. You want to jump in on this, Mike?
No, I don't. One of the reasons I have money is I don't waste it on gambling. I go back and forth on this too. It's a beautiful mystery. It's what Aaron Rodgers wants us to think. He wants us to not know. I think the Packers, specifically the CEO, Mark Murphy, doesn't want him to show up. I think he's daring him to not show up. I think that's the only way to make sense of that gratuitous remark he made last week, calling him a complicated fella. I think Murphy would rather move on with Jordan Love, save $35 million in salary, and they would get bonus money back from Aaron Rodgers. They don't have to worry about him playing for the Broncos or anyone else and making them look stupid. Now they could trade him after the season. But I think at this point, Murphy, you attach him to a lie detector test, you'd have to say, yeah, I'd rather the guy not show up this year. And maybe that vibe makes Aaron Rodgers more determined to show up.
But you want to trade him, don't you, to get something for him? So you wouldn't do anything now? You would wait until after the season?
Yeah, I think at this point you get more after the season. You get more teams to the table. Yeah. It'd be like Peyton Manning in 2012. You'd have 10 teams. I think you'd easily have 10 teams after the season. Right now, you got the Broncos, maybe the Raiders. Maybe the Raiders. The Raiders are saying all the right things about Derek Carr, but if Aaron Rodgers becomes available and you're looking at him going to the Broncos, how do you at least not make a phone call if for no reason other than to drive up the price the Broncos have to pay? But after the season, when we have another, I was going to say 256, it's now 272 games, teams will look at their quarterbacks and say, got to get rid of that guy. Oh, Aaron Rodgers is available. Let's go get in line and try to get him.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand the timing of all of this, Mike, that if you're Rodgers, give me Rodgers' side of this, that what is the end game for him this year?
Well, I find it fascinating, Dan, that guys like James Jones, who played with Rodgers, still talked to Rodgers, and more importantly, Rodgers still talks to them after they do media and say what Rodgers has said. I think Rodgers is doing a little puppet mastery through guys like James Jones. He says it's fixable, it's fixable. Well, okay, then fix it. Tell us what it's going to take to fix it. What does it take? I don't know. And as I told you on Friday, I think this is a high-stakes PR battle where each side is trying to make the other side look like the bad guy. And I just think right now Aaron Rodgers wants to create chaos. What was the line from one of the Batman movies? Some men just like to see the world burn. I think that Rodgers is just trying to make the front office of the Packers burn.
Yeah, man. It's one thing that he says he loves everything about Green Bay. He loves the tradition. He loves the fans. He loves the coaching staff. He loves his teammates. So what if you don't like somebody in management? And if it is fixable, then what is it that needs to be fixed is what I want to know, because you can't undraft Jordan Love. That's not fixable unless you say we're going to trade him, and they don't want to do that.
Here's your poll question for today. Yes or no, is there someone in management at your workplace that you hate? Overwhelmingly, yes. And you still show up every day. That's nuts. So, and it's not like he has to deal with Mark Murphy in the locker room. And I would advise Mark Murphy and Brian Gutekunst to avoid the locker room in the practice field this year, unless they're going to wear cups. But you're there with your teammates. You're there with your head coach. You're there for the fans. I just, the whole thing is PR driven, and who knows what Aaron Rodgers wants, and that's what he wants. He wants us talking about him, and he wants to reserve the right to say, why are you talking about me?
Yeah, but I don't know what the end game is, Mike. Is he willing to sit out and not play football this year? Does he want to be traded? Like, at some point, you have to get to, now let's sit down and discuss what's going to happen here. Is he just going to show up and play football this year and act as if none of this happened?
I thought for a long time that that's what he would do, Dan, that he would show up and basically say, what's the big deal? Is there, you know, a booger that I'm unaware of? Why is everyone looking at me? And act like it's a media creation, because it always is our fault, obviously.
Yes.
They create the template that we react to, and it's our fault for reacting to it. But I just really, truly don't know, and I change my mind all the time, and I think I am a victim of what he's trying to create. It would be very easy for him to say what he wants, how he wants it. He doesn't have to. Packers fans get upset with me, or more accurately, Aaron Rodgers fans get upset with me when I say he should tell people what he wants. No, he doesn't have to. But when you don't, you create these situations where we end up obsessing over what the guy wants because, for whatever reason, he won't tell us what he wants.
He's Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk Live co-host with Chris Sims. You've got, what, less than 2 weeks for the veterans to show up? 2 weeks today. What's going to happen with Deshaun Watson? Is he eligible to show up for training camp?
This is a great question that has taken a back seat to the Aaron Rodgers drama. And Nick Caserio, the GM of the Texans, was on radio in Houston yesterday. And he said what the talking points have been for weeks now. They're not saying anything about Watson, et cetera. But at the end of the answer, he said, as we get close to training camp, we'll make the best decision that we can in the interest of the Houston Texans. Dan, I think that the Texans have been hoping, and I know that the Texans have been hoping, that the 22 lawsuits pending against Deshaun Watson would be settled. Because if they're settled, you're able to trade Watson, and you're able to get a lot for him in trade. That's the thing that teams are waiting to have go away if they can properly resolve the cases. And I've been an advocate of Deshaun Watson facing the music, having his reckoning, making these 22 individuals feel like they've gotten justice, had their quasi day in court, write the check and move on with your life, and then he can be traded. There's a possibility that the Texans are going to have to make a decision without the cases being settled. What do you do with Deshaun Watson as training camp arrives? Do you trade him for whatever you can get, which is a lot less if the 22 cases are pending, or do you let him show up? Because I think he will show up. Because if he gets put on paid leave, which people think will happen, Texans have to pay him $10 million to not play for them this year. So I think for the Texans, they have to ask, if the cases aren't settled, do we just take whatever we can get, bargain basement deal, to trade Watson? Or do we run the risk of paying him $10 million? And the other side of it, too, and Sims and I were talking about this earlier today. At some point, the league, I think, owes it to Watson, the Texans, and any team that would want to trade for Watson to give people an inkling of what they're thinking. Are you putting him on paid leave? You know, they had a lot of uncertainty with Antonio Brown 2 years ago. They wouldn't tell teams what they were going to do, and then no one would touch him. With this, he's under contract. He's getting $10 million this year from somebody. I think they should let the relevant people know what they're going to do so people can make their best decisions about what they're going to do moving forward.
The most interesting training camps will be where?
Well, obviously Green Bay. I mean, that's a given. Whether Rodgers is there or not there. It's either going to be Rodgers and, you know, making his passive-aggressive comments and then getting mad when people point out that he's made passive-aggressive comments, which I always like. Seattle is going to be compelling because, yeah, hey, did you hear Russell Wilson never asked for a trade? No, he didn't have to. He went on your show and he made it clear he wants out. And then his agent comes out and says, well, my client doesn't want to be traded. But in the event that you were traded, these are the four teams he played for. Of course, he was disgruntled and unhappy. He was miserable at the Super Bowl watching Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady. How's that going to go? Are they able to set all that aside? And is he on board with the Shane Waldron offense? And, you know, the Jaguars training camp, just for sheer entertainment purposes, with Tim Tebow and the college approach that Urban Meyer is bringing to town, is that going to work? So, you know, there's always that short list of must-see training camps that obviously never end up being the subject of Hard Knocks, but I wish they would.
Okay, you touched on Tim Tebow. I thought he was going to be a big distraction. We haven't had that distraction with Tim Tebow. When is that going to happen?
Well, they've kept him from talking to reporters. And I'm not up on the rules of when access is mandatory in the off season. Once you get into the regular season, everyone's got to be available at least once during the week and after each game. But the weirdest things happen, Dan. There's been at least two straight Urban Meyer press conferences, and the folks covering the Jaguars haven't asked about Tebow. Just haven't asked about it. And I get the impression locally they've gotten used to it, and that's helped this kind of not be a factor. He's just kind of going about his business. And I don't know, or are they getting the vibe that Meyer doesn't want to be asked about him? I don't know. But he's there. They're selling jerseys. and he's quietly learning the tight end position. I still think he's going to be on the team this year. They're going to find a way to get him on the team, on the field, catching one-yard touchdown passes, throwing one-yard touchdown passes, or having one-yard rushing touchdowns.
It'll be awesome. It'll be awesome. That's another cottage industry. Do you realize the cottage industries we have in our world?
Oh, and I love them.
Like Aaron Rodgers, that's a cottage industry. That it the story about those covering the stories. LeBron is a cottage industry. Tom Brady is a cottage industry. There's certain guys that you have. I mean, the mothership has moved people around from city to city to cover LeBron James. Yeah, hey, we want you to relocate to Los Angeles to cover LeBron. It's pretty crazy.
Dan, people ask me, why do I keep writing and talking about Aaron Rodgers? Easy response, I am a businessman. I have access real time to my traffic. I see which stories people read. I give the people what they want. Isn't it funny in this business? You've got the people who give the fans and the readers what they want, and then you've got the people who give them what they think they should want. And those are the ones that don't stay in business. It's that simple.
I'll check back in with you soon, Mike.
Anytime.
Thank you, bud.
Anytime.
That's Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk Live co-host.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's get to Wright Thompson, ESPN senior writer. Let's make Pappyland the bestseller list on New York Times. The story of family, fine bourbon, and other things that last. Available online wherever books are sold. I never steer you wrong when I tell you about a great book. And this is a great book. It's a great read. It feels like it's supposed to be about bourbon, but it's really about family, father, son. And Wright Thompson joins us on the program. How did I do? How did I do with selling that?
Well, I think you did well. Like Rush, you know, obviously I don't care about being on the top 10, but we're both lying. I feel like a Rush show is like a Grateful Dead show that isn't fun. I don't know that for sure. But no, look, I appreciate that. It's, you know, we've joked before. My wife makes fun of me saying I did Eat, Pray, Love for dads, but I mean, it is ostensibly the story of Julian Van Winkle making the rarest bourbon in the world. But I mean, as you alluded to it, and this accidentally happened sort of, it turned into a story about Julian and his dad and his children, and a story about me and my dad and my two daughters. And because it ends up being a meditation on inheritance and on home and family and sort of the things that we want to pass down to our kids and the things that we don't. I think, you know, you and I have talked about that before, but I mean, it is trying to unravel those things.
If you were going to give a Bourbon 101 to our audience, what to look for, the taste, you know, because it can be pretty intimidating when you walk into a liquor store and you're going, I have no idea what I'm buying here. Do you know enough about bourbon after hanging out with Pappy Van Winkle that you could give some advice?
I mean, the thing I learned is sort of counterintuitive to what you would think after all of that time around him, which is, one, there's no wrong answer. So, like, whatever it is that you like, for whatever reason you like, is great. I mean, there's so many brands out there. Almost all of the whiskey comes from 6 or 7 distilleries. You know, I get these emails all the time from people who bought Pappyland and are like, well, you know, my buddy's getting married, or, you know, what bottle of whiskey should I get? And my standard answer is go get a really nice crystal decanter and fill it up with Maker's Mark or Wild Turkey. Because, you know, I don't, you know, the point is the whiskey. And one of the things I write about in the book a lot is coming to understand that the whiskey is the vehicle for the thing. It isn't the thing itself. It is the conversation. It is the people you're with. It is the people who were once there, who are now there only in the sort of spirit of the toast. And that matters more to me, at least, and to Julian, than however many points it got in some competition.
Yeah, because you can go into a store. In fact, I went into a store a couple of days ago, and I just love to pick their brain. I always say, what is it that everybody wants, and why do they want it? And it comes down to supply and demand. And people should know that Pappy Van Winkle is very expensive on the secondary market. And that the owner, Julian, doesn't make that money. And it feels like, I think in the book, people would come up to him, they're angry at him. Like, why is your bourbon so expensive?
Well, it's funny because people are always asking, why don't you make more? And he always says, because I'm not selling it to you. I'm selling it to your children. And I don't know what they're going to like. I don't want to make a bunch of this stuff that comes out in 20 years and find out that the trend has changed. I mean, one of the things I found fascinating about being around Julian and about working on the book was that he has to live 12, 15, 20, 23 years in the future. And that sort of accidentally bleeds into other parts of his life. Like, you start to find it really seductive because you think, well, could I live like that? You know, I work for a cable news network. You know, I mean, there is no tomorrow past the next 30 seconds. And Julian is 20 years out. I mean, the whiskey they're putting in barrels right now, he won't live to see bottled. And so one of the things I thought that was really fascinating about spending time with him was both listening to him talk about that, but also just watch how that bled into how he orders his life.
He's Wright Thompson. The book is Pappyland, A Story of Family, Fine Bourbon, and the Things That Last. It's available online wherever books are sold. Give me the person you profiled that you'd like to do a follow-up on.
I mean, I'd like to go, evidently, and if somebody knows more about this, please reach out to me, but evidently Michael Jordan is becoming a really good marlin fisherman. And I remember Richard Ben Kramer's famous piece about Ted Williams and how serious fishermen respected Ted Williams, not because he was famous, but because he was good at the thing. And I'm curious how good Michael is getting at that and how into it he's getting. I mean, you know, is it just something to go do while you drink beer, or has this activated the lizard brain? And the name of his boat, which evidently he came up with, I love, is Catch 23, which is a great fishing boat name. Yeah. Like, I'm just like, oh, Michael. But I would be interested to know if that is a hobby or if it has entered the realm of obsession.
And you do these deep dives. You did a wonderful one with Pat Riley. It just feels like there's interconnected tissue with a lot of these marquee people. In what they do and how they do it and why they do it, or am I reading too much into that? Right.
Well, I think there are only like six stories, you know, that happen over and over and over again. I mean, I love just to sort of sit back and laugh, like fathers and sons, man. You know, we think we're so complicated and we're just not. And you know, I mean, it's all there right below the surface. So, I mean, I've spent a lot of time wondering, I don't know if you have, but like, is there a greatness gene? Like, if Michael Jordan would have been introduced to swimming or to chess, like, was he going to be great at whatever first activated his mind? I mean, you and I talked about that a couple of years ago about Tiger Woods. I mean, if Earl Woods would have handed Tiger Woods a cello, would he have been Yo-Yo Ma? And like, I don't really know the answer to that, but there do seem to be points of connection with these people who are super high achievers.
Are those people ever satisfied, though?
I don't know. Usually not. That's what, you know, you and I've talked about Dale Murphy, who is the happiest retired ball player I've ever met. And I think that it's because the people who are happy understand that the famous version of them has only a passing similarity with the actual them. And that you have to like somehow let that person go. I think the people who are happiest are the ones who don't, you know, is that famous John Updike quote, the mask eats the face. I think the people who are happiest are the ones who are self-aware enough to know that that is probably going to happen and try to stop it.
What are you working on now?
I'm doing a thing about Manchester United that is roaring along. I can't really talk about it, but I've been brainstorming a thing with Mickey Hart from the Grateful Dead. 16-year-old me, his mind is blown to get an email from Michael Hart. So that's pretty incredible.
Are you in England now?
No, I just got home. I'm in Laurel, Mississippi. I had a book event last night.
Oh, okay.
But no, I got home, I don't know, Sunday. I don't even know what day it is. And
but you can't tell me what the Manchester United.
Oh, sure, sure. And well, so what's it's nominally about the Super League, which I'm sure you guys have talked about on the show. And but what's interesting is I wanted to write about the 150-year arc of Man United fans as a way of showing both who the people were who were really angry about this and how they got so angry. And, you know, I really like places where the membrane between the past and the present is really thin. And, you know, Manchester, you know, the birthplace of the Industrial Revolution, they were these neighborhoods just north of the city center where all the cotton mills were. And that was forever the heartlands of Man United supporters. And the same forces of globalism that were invented in those factories where their ancestors worked are now at work on soccer and everything else, football to them. Apologies if you're in Manchester. And it was interesting to me that what you're really watching is a business decoupling from one group of parochial local fans and recoupling to a large global audience of consumers. And so all of the stress and the tension and the angst that you feel in Manchester feels connected to those really old forces that are just beneath the surface.
Have you taken a deep dive into music with a profile? I mean, I know that I've known you with all the things you've done sports-wise, but I'm curious about that musical genius that we see, and is it applicable to... Like Bruce Springsteen strikes me as a perfectionist and driven to whatever lengths to continue to prove himself. But I don't know if you've done any profiles.
I have not. I would like to, because I do think there's some similarities. I mean, I think specifically with Bruce. I mean, when you go, I like to listen to those records in order because they all feel like letters from a certain time in his life. And one of the things I think is probably different is that an athlete is great by suppressing that self-knowledge. And I think if you're going to be Bruce Springsteen, you have to be hyper self-aware if you're going to put out these documents that are based on your own life that feel true to the listener. And so I think that there, it's interesting that I think there are probably a lot of the same traits, but I bet musicians to be great have to access insecurities and doubts that athletes have to deny and repress. I mean, I don't know. I've never really thought about it until now, but I mean, I imagine that there's similarities, but also those things feel very different.
I wish you luck with the book, and hopefully we'll make it. Now, do you want to be number one on the New York Times bestseller on the bestseller?
Well, how about where, what was Led Zeppelin with Whole Lotta Love? Do we know?
Paulie, do we know where Whole Lotta Love ended up? I should know this. My favorite band.
I got it as it was once 8 on the charts.
Right. You know what? 8 sounds great. I mean, by the way, the fact that When the Levee Breaks wasn't the number one song in the world is just utterly baffling to me. I mean, get out. Come on. Who's voting on this stuff?
I think it's just people buying it. Is that right, Paulie?
That's it. Just Billboard rankings, yeah. Amazon purchases.
So we did that to Led Zeppelin. We collectively.
Well, it's interesting. So what was number one? Sorry, we're way off the track. What was number one when this was number 8?
Paulie, do you have Billboard, the top 10 list when Zeppelin was 8?
Yeah, I do, actually. I Want You Back by the Jackson 5. Well, that's pretty good.
That's a good song. What was 2?
Venus, Shocking Blue. I don't know that. Raindrops Keep Falling in My Head, B.J. Thomas. Okay.
He just passed away.
I'm correcting it now. I confirmed Whole Lotta Love was number 4 that week.
Oh,
okay. And what was 3?
Raindrops Keep Falling My Head.
That's a good list.
Don't Cry Daddy by Elvis was 6.
Come on.
Sly and the Family Stone was number 8.
Sly underrated. Sly and the Family Stone underrated. Hey, good luck with the book. Always great to talk to you, right? Thank you, buddy.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sportsbook, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NBA Competition Committee will reportedly look into the way certain shooters initiate contact and draw fouls with unnatural movements, a.k.a. the Reggie Miller rule. James Harden and Trae Young have made a living out of doing this. Reg is the godfather of this. He joins us now. We're going to call it the Reggie Miller rule. What do you think?
This is getting ridiculous. I'm serious. I mean, I got penalized. I shouldn't say I, but they put the rule in about the leg kick, which to this day I still believe is a good move and a good shot.
Yeah, but it's unnatural, though. You're kicking your leg out to draw
contact. I'm not kicking. I'm just creating space. That's all. This is my space. So, look.
Okay, explain this, though. What they're focusing this rule on James Harden and Trae Young, right?
And we've been hearing this year about those two players. And I guess you can probably throw Giannis in there as well. Offensive players seeking out contact on drives, on those floaters, and initiating the contact and getting the call. I think it's going to be so hard to monitor for these officials. They already got enough on their plate. Now they've got to figure out in a split second, at times without the help of replay, who's initiating the contact. They wanted scoring up. So what they're really doing is penalizing the shooter and the scorer in this instance. So I'm a little surprised at that because freedom of movement, this is what they've always wanted. So this is going to me, kind of hurt some of the scores because as a natural born scorer, as I won, was you do seek out contact. I felt I played better and I shot better when I knew where the defender was, when I could feel him. It was a much harder shot for me if I was wide open, as opposed to someone closing on me or being right on my body. I felt that was a little bit easier for me to get the ball off and score.
But it feels like Trae Young and James Harden, there's a gimmick about them drawing their contact.
I'm more surprised they haven't talked about like the traveling and the step backs and the side steps. To me, that's more infuriating than seeking out contact, but I kind of get it a little bit.
Less free throws, maybe faster games. Maybe that's what the NBA is trying to do here. I don't know.
Again, you're adding and piling on these officials to make split second decisions in big time moments of playoff games or for next year. I mean, I think they're overloaded already, the officials, and now you're telling them they got to be able to differentiate between who's making the contact.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Do you think that there were referees that didn't like you? Like truly didn't like you?
I wouldn't say didn't like me, but there were certainly some officials I felt at times had a bias. I wouldn't say didn't like. I mean, that's a strong word. I felt like I could communicate with most officials. There were some officials that you just couldn't say anything to. It was a quick T, and you're kind of muted for the rest of the game. But I felt I had a pretty good relationship with most officials, though I did talk a lot to them and complain a lot to them. It's how you go about it. And
does complaining work, Reg?
No, it doesn't, but it sure made me feel better. No, it doesn't. Isn't it a day? No, it doesn't. But what you're trying to do and what I was trying to do, you're always trying to plant a little bit of seed, because if it's a close game and the game is in the balance, you want all that talking you did through 3.5 quarters to matter in the last 2 minutes of a close game. That's probably the only reason why I talked so much, was trying to plant a seed.
Reg will be on the call for the Eastern Conference Finals. Who do you expect to be in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Well, last week we talked about this was going to be a sweep by Brooklyn. They were looking great. And I keep telling people, it's great to have the best talent in the world. It's great to be well coached. But to win a championship, Theodore, you've got to have a lot of luck on your teams. You think about Kobe's and Shaq's three-peat with the Lakers. You think about MJ and Scotty and back-to-back three-peats. A lot of luck. Were they talented? Absolutely. Were they well-coached? Absolutely. But you've got to have a lot of luck. Can you even remember when MJ even thought about missing a game because of an injury when he was – I can't remember if he ever did miss a game. And it wasn't like he was just shooting jump shots. I mean, he was driving, punishing people, and no twisted ankles, no knee issues. A lot of luck goes into winning championships. And we're the healthiest team is going to win this year's championship. Who's going to be standing at the end? I mean, it's unfortunate. Injuries are a part of the game. You just don't want them at this time of the year, which we're seeing right now.
Yeah, and Harden's status, he's upgraded to doubtful for tonight.
Yeah.
He's not going to play. Now it's on Kevin Durant. And he's had the benefit of these super teams recently. Now it's back to, all right.
OKC days.
Let's see what you can do. Let's see. Go out there. Let's see you win a big game.
I will say this. If there's any one player who could deliver a huge game in a moment like this, it's Kevin Durant. And I will say this. Role players play better at home. I expect Brooklyn and some of these guys that normally don't get the limelight because it's Kyrie or James Harden along with KD. They'll shoot better. They'll play harder. That New York crowd will kind of energize them a little bit. It's, you know, I'm not going out on a limb here. Who wins tonight, to me, wins the series between Milwaukee and Brooklyn. If I'm Brooklyn, all I'm saying is, look, let's just win our home games. We win our home games, we advance to the conference finals. But this is Milwaukee's best chance. This will maybe their only chance, because if it goes seven games, I can't see them winning back in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
This is the chance for Milwaukee to win the series. They've got to win tonight with two superstars down for the Nets and just KD. It's got to be all our chips in the center of the table for Milwaukee. They must win tonight to win this series.
Is it a bigger game for Durant or a bigger game for the Greek Freak? Because he doesn't have any excuses here.
I agree. I think there's built-in excuses for KD because he doesn't have Kyrie and Harden. But it's the only game tonight. All eyes will be on this matchup. And let's face it, Milwaukee has come up short the last 2 years. They've had the best record the last 2 years, and they've fallen short. And Greek has not played up to MVP expectations by winning back-to-back MVPs. Come playoff, he has disappeared. He had a great game four, but you're right.
Why is he taking those threes?
What's that?
Why is the Greek Freak taking those threes?
I have no idea.
Like, and I want him to take
them. They're daring him. They're baiting him into it, but that's a recipe for disaster. I just don't get it. I really don't get it.
Yeah, I don't want him going to the hoop. If I'm Brooklyn, if you stay on the perimeter, that means you can't rebound and you're not a good shooter. So go ahead, take those shots there.
And here's the thing: it's not only the threes. I'd almost bait him into long twos too. If you're going to settle and you're not going to put pressure on Blake Griffin or any of our interior bigs, I'll settle for that. I'll win. That's a win if you're Steve Nash in Brooklyn.
He's Reggie Miller, the Hall of Famer, Turner Sports NBA analyst. He'll be on the call for the Eastern Conference Finals. Chris Paul getting a lot of love after the sweep. And I was talking to your buddy Mark Jackson yesterday on where's Chris Paul on the all-time point guard list. And he had Chris Paul up there pretty high. I like Chris, but is it asking too much that he hasn't won? And I'm not talking about an NBA title. I mean, he hadn't even had an appearance there, but like getting to the Western Conference Finals, I don't know.
This will be his second appearance in the Western Conference Finals throughout his 13 or 14 year career.
And he's played on good teams.
I will say this. if Chris ends up winning a championship, not this year or any year, in my opinion, he moves into the top five. Right now, he's not in my top five, top seven, eight right now.
Okay, so it's Magic,
Isaiah, Steph. We're considering Steph a point guard. Steph, Stockton, maybe J. Kidd.
Okay.
That would probably be my five. Now, if he wins a championship, I think he would bump Stockton out of my top five.
Wow.
If he was to win a championship. If he doesn't win a championship, he would probably be six or seven. You still got Oscar out there. You still have Gary Payton out there. Jerry West, is he considered a point guard? He's in that mix, in that discussion.
He was a shooting guard.
But I mean, people are going to say that about Steph as well, but Steph is classified as a point guard.
Yeah, but he's only
Allen Iverson, shooting guard.
No, he's a point guard.
Are we putting AI as a point guard or a shooting guard?
No, he's a point guard. He's a scorer. He's not a shooting guard.
I think Eric Snow was the point guard on that team.
Okay. Okay.
Guard.
What is LeBron?
He's a point guard.
Yes, he is.
Yeah,
so he's a point guard. Is he the greatest point guard of all time?
No, no one will ever trump Magic Johnson as the best point guard ever.
Well, wait a minute. We got LeBron as the second best player of all time, Reg. So he's the second best player of all time, but he's not the best point guard.
No, he's not the best point guard.
I just boxed you in a corner. I'm Scottie Pippen. I'm picking you up full court.
Yes, but I'm finding a way to get around you.
Because LeBron's a point guard.
He's a point forward.
So was Scottie. Scottie Pippen was a point forward.
So who are you taking, Scottie or LeBron?
LeBron.
All right, just
yeah.
Make sure we're on the same page here.
Yeah, but all right, so LeBron's the second best point guard of all time. Yes, he is.
I guess you got to put LeBron as
he's going to end up top five in assists.
Then I'm moving J-Kid out of there. J-Kid is gone.
Steph.
I'm going Isaiah, Steph, no order. Magic, Isaiah, Steph. Those three are guaranteed. Those three are guaranteed. There's two spots that will always be up for debate. And
all right,
that's going to be Stockton and J-Kid.
If you couldn't play with Magic, let me take Magic out of this. The point guard you would want to play with, current or past?
Either Isaiah or Jason Kidd for my skill set. For my skill set. One of those two.
But did you hate Isaiah?
Oh, man, I couldn't ask. Well, it's that Central Division. Couldn't stand him just like MJ.
Okay.
He would be smiling all in your face, acting like he's your friend and stuff, taking the biggest cheap shots ever, and one of the toughest point guards. I love me some Zeke. Former coach. Coach me.
Yeah.
But sneaky nasty. Sneaky. Sneaky.
Does he know people don't like him?
I don't think he cares.
Really?
I don't think he cares.
Like, Bill Laimbeer didn't care. Isaiah, I think, cared. Remember the whole thing with, you know, when they were going to freeze out Jordan? And, like, that bothered Isaiah.
Well, it wasn't wrong. it was true.
Did you? So you knew? Were you on
that? I was not on that All-Star team. But rumors have it.
Would you have frozen out Jordan?
No.
If you were on, if Isaiah said we're not going to throw in the ball,
I don't know how you can freeze out. I don't know how you can freeze.
No,
out
you
Jordan.
Just act like he's not open.
Come on, man.
Do you think it's true, though, that he froze out Mike?
I think there was a little friendly animosity going on there. Yes, I do.
I don't think it was friendly.
Yes.
I don't think it was friendly. Judging from The Last Dance, it's not friendly. That's not friendly at all, certainly from Michael's perspective.
Hey, I'm rolling with Zeke. Zeke.
Wait, if I said you could have Zeke or Mike.
From my skill set, like to play with?
Yeah.
I'm not rolling with either one of them. I've got built up issues with both.
Okay.
I can't roll with either.
How about Steve Nash? You can play with Steve.
Oh, I can play with Steve. Yeah, that's another.
And Stockton.
Steve Nash is top eight, right? He's got to be in that category. Certainly top 10.
The amazing thing is the Phoenix Suns had J. Kidd, Kevin Johnson, and Steve Nash at the same time.
Yes. Wow. I mean, wow.
And KJ was the starter, right? So the backup, those are the Hall of Famers with J. Kidd and Steve Nash. I don't think KJ's a Hall of Famer, is he?
No, but for those of you who have never seen Kevin Johnson, I mean, that's who those two dudes learned from. Was Kevin Johnson.
Yeah.
One of the best pick and roll players maybe ever. Maybe ever.
He was athletic, man.
Oh, he was good.
He was. Oh, by the way.
He and I, we go back to our rivalry between UCLA and Cal. So we were the same draft. I've had a lot of time seeing Kevin Johnson. So
I got you playing 80 games or more in a season 10 times. Durant, Harden, and Kyrie have played 80 or more games in a season 7 times combined. Would you have load management now, though?
You have to now. I mean, that's...
like, but travel's better, nutrition is better. Like, everything is better now. It could have helped Nash with his back. It could have helped Larry Bird, maybe with load management there. Does it make sense to play 80 games in a season?
If you love the game, yeah, Theodore. I mean, I love the game. I loved playing. I love performing. Looking back on my career, and someone told me the stat, I played in 96% of my games. I played over 1,300 games. There's something about lacing them up each and every day. Now that I look back, could I have taken a game or two off? Certainly. But I always felt there was some fan, kid, mom, dad, that was saving up their piggy bank to come watch the Indiana Pacers play either at home or on the road. And they heard about this guy named Reggie Miller who talked a lot of trash and shot 35, 40 footers. This was going to be their one opportunity to see. I didn't know who they were, but I felt it was an obligation to play. That's was my mentality of playing.
Nobody thinks that now.
It's about the money.
Yeah, I know, but I think that, you know, that you're going to be able to get into another contract. If you limit your games, you get ready for the postseason. Right. And, like, you know, Kawhi, that knee is going to be an issue. I don't know how serious that knee is, if it's just arthritic and it's going to be there, you know, the rest of his life. But he might be playing himself into one more contract because of load management here. And I understand it. I don't like it. But I do understand where this is a business. Everybody's expendable. And these athletes are trying to stay as long as they can.
And you've got to maximize what your body will deliver. And I get it. And I understand it. These are billionaires talking to millionaires.
Yeah.
And I totally get it. I get it. Because you only have one body, you only have one career, and you only have a certain window to make as much money as you can. And that's why you see certain guys take off during the regular season.
Yeah.
But to me, it's kind of catching up to them come playoff time because their body is not used to all the pounding come playoff time.
And just being in shape. Reg will be on the call for the Eastern Conference Finals. Great to talk to you again, Reg. We'll talk to you soon.
Theodore, you're the best. Love my Danettes. Love y'all.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.